to the meeting this evening to go ahead and introduce themselves, and then we'll get into reviewing the meeting minutes from October. I guess you can do a quick introduction if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. I'm Monica Zappa. I'm the Communicable Disease Program Manager for Clark County Public Health.
Great. Welcome. Just ready to take a moment and review the October meeting notes, and then we'll have action on that and then move deeper into the agenda.
She's not really in danger of anyone.
Yeah.
In the city.
Got that far.
Okay, any revisions or edits to the notes? In our executive meeting to defer on the December meeting, having the retreat and two strong sessions after tonight in regards to ACEs and the logic model. So we'll be punting on the December meeting and reconvening in January is what's being proposed. Sandy, you have an update for us?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Sandy Matheson. I work as the director of the Prevention and Youth Programs for Educational Service District 112. I work with all the school districts in Clark County focused on prevention. Tonight I'm going to talk to you as a member of something called the Healthy Living Collaborative. And the Healthy Living Collaborative is a group of individuals who've come together to try and create a healthier community. And the Healthy Living Collaborative goes across Clark, Calhoun, Skamania, and Wakayakum counties. So Katina Inman is the executive director of that, but I serve on the steering committee or whatever, the policy level committee for it. she asked me tonight to talk with you about one of the issues that that we're trying to collect information about, and that is affordable housing and in Clark County. So I've handed you a sheet of paper, looks like this, and it has a summary of some of this, the information that's available and what our ask is tonight. So many of you got a piece of paper that looks like this. What I need you to do, if you got one of these, is to put pen to paper and fill out as much as you can for about 3 minutes, and then I'll collect them. We're basically doing a needs assessment, talking to people that about what they see as major gaps or needs in the area of affordable housing for our county. So let me, I know this is like weird, but I'm just going to read this because it's really well done, and I want to talk about the issue for a second. Like many communities across the nation, Clark County has a greater affordable housing demand than supplies can accommodate. To effectively and efficiently accommodate this demand, the Vancouver Housing Authority, called the VHA, wants to adapt and improve its programming and community partnerships to support Clark County needs. The VHA operates public housing, housing choice voucher programs, and multifamily housing. Currently, 7,000 plus individuals, approximately 3,000 families, are served to these programs. Subsidized housing is primarily available to low-income families and individuals. Low-income families with children, elderly people, and people with disabilities receive priority placement. In 1999, the VHA was selected by HUD as a participant in a demonstration program called Moving to Work. Moving to Work allows the VHA to flexibly use their federal dollars to design and test locally adapted strategies to respond to community needs and priority populations. So today, then, if you can look on this page, there are two examples about very successful Moving to Work program agencies that have happened, one in New Hampshire and one right here in Washington State, the Tacoma Housing Authority. So those are examples of ways that the VHA could use their funding to support need. And I know you guys can do this, but I want to focus a little bit on the Tacoma Housing Authority. They're best known for their partnership with Tacoma Public Schools and other educational institutions to support educational attainment, and the partners with the school district for the MacArthur, it's called the MacArthur Elementary Pilot Project, housing vouchers for 5 years directly to vulnerable students and their families. Any of you know Andy Silver, but he is the attorney who is the chair of the local Council for the Homeless. And Andy and I are currently working on some initiatives with districts, school districts, to think about possibly doing a voucher program for children and then collecting educational outcomes for those young children and their families if they can get into stable housing. We want to collect information to see if children actually go to school and get good grades and have good attendance, that kind of thing. And the VHA is interested in possibly doing some work around that. Okay? So, just a little more of a commercial here. More than 11% of Clark County's growing population lives in poverty, 49%, almost 50% of whom are under age 25 years old. Single mother families make up a majority of households in poverty. Another area of concern is the growth of elderly or seniors. By 2030, the number of people in the age 16 over is projected to grow by 158% compared to 48% growth for all ages. Approximately one-third of the elderly population will need affordable housing. These are just two examples of priority populations for Clark County with affordable housing needs. How am I doing? Going too fast?
Over me?
Okay. So it's important to understand the different populations. We will have different housing needs and end results. For example, families with a parent who are able to work have greater potential to achieve independent living. Elderly people, one-third who will likely have a disability, will need affordable housing on a long-term basis. Effective community partnerships will enable a more efficient and targeted response to the varying demographics and their necessary support systems. The VA, along with community partners, can tailor and improve that response to Clark County populations in need of affordable housing. So, the ask today is, you have a piece of paper here. If you can take like 3 minutes and just kind of write some responses in here and then hand those in or leave them on the table and I'll collect them. But what, through your work, we all represent different areas. What has your experience been in the major needs and gaps in affordable housing? And is the problem that there are no housing programs for whatever that is? Or are there not enough resources to meet the demand? Finally, what are the, or, well, number three, what are the specific ways you see or hear about this problem? Include some of those examples for us. And if the VHA were to engage in this issue, what kind of community partnerships would you imagine? And what kind of impact did they have? And then finally, truly, who else should we be talking to in this needs assessment process? Okay? So, 11 minutes after 6. That'll give yourself 15 minutes after. And then leave them on your table. Thank you. You guys are great. You can have some pie if you fill it up.
If there's any left.
Do you have any extra fact sheets, Sandy?
You want fact sheets?
We just read, yeah.
Here.
Mine went to some of that. I'd love to get them.
You can have all the rest of them.
Oh, I have that many.
Are you going to say that? Oh, you can. I'm not a good one to follow.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Andy. Before we move into the department update, was brought to council's attention in regards to the concern around oil trains. I discussed with staff and they reached out to the Department of Health. The DOH secretary, I just want to give a quick update on this before we get to the chief operating officer position update. The DOH secretary urged the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council to use a health impact assessment of the project. I believe that's the letter that Joan provided to us at our last meeting to be able to review. Julie was able to reach out to DOH staff. The DOH staff just completed reviewing the report for rail transport under review. The report calls out that the potential risk for health and safety and drinking water contamination is one of the risks. It cites the individual environmental impact statement, EIS. Efforts are underway for the various applications, and that the Energy Facility Siting Council is in charge of the Vancouver Project EIS. Apparently, the EIS is just past the scoping phase and moving towards starting the draft phase. DOH is hoping the EIS will incorporate a health impact assessment, but they don't know of any other work on this at this time. It's my understanding action is supposed to be taken by the governor sometime in late spring, early summer, as far as how the sessions fall. So most likely we'll have another update on that when we reconvene in January. But just wanted to follow up and find out what the status was on the specific project at the DOH level. Janice, department update.
Yes.
CEO position, whoever I am.
So many of you know we've been in the process of recruiting our chief operations officer after Tricia got another position at Washington County. We had, I think our original pool had about 12 or 13 candidates, and we narrowed it down to 4 candidates. We brought them in for a panel interview with leadership team, a less formal discussion panel with our management group. We had them meet with a community panel, which Sandy was kind enough to sit on. We also had Dave Seabrook, that some of you probably know, that used to be on the Public Health Advisory Council. We had someone from LULAC, which is a national civil rights Latino organization. We had Amy Reynolds from SHARE, that does a lot of homeless work in our community. And Jeff? Barb West from the Free Clinic. And then we had, Julie was kind enough to take each candidate around and give them a tour of the department and give them an opportunity to meet all the staff. And then we got input from the staff. I mean, it wasn't interviews, but just kind of, were the candidates respectful? Did they seem engaged, interested, all that kind of stuff? And so we collected data from all 4 data points. We ended up offering the position to Roxanne Wolf. She is, it was interesting. All 4 candidates sort of came out a little bit differently with each group, but Roxanne was the only one that seemed to do pretty well with all the groups. The others seemed more polarizing. And she is currently living in Bakersfield, California. She has her master's of science in healthcare administration, and she's about to finish her master's in public health. She's extremely interested in social justice, workforce development. She currently is doing a lot of work with a private agricultural business, and what really got her engaged and interested in public health is part of what she's been working on is putting together health care insurance plans for the migrant workers that work for this agricultural company, and really got engaged and interested in the conditions that the migrant workers live in and how you really do change, impact people's health. It's not just going to a doctor, but it's your conditions, your living conditions, your socioeconomic status, all those kinds of things that affect. So I think she's really, really excited to join us. I think you guys will really like her. Anybody from public health or Sandy, do you guys want to add anything about Roxanne?
She's great. She's very well spoken.
Yeah.
And very personable.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think she'll be a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she'll be a really good fit in the organization. So, Alan, Jeff, and I predicted we would not agree on a candidate, and I was pleasantly surprised that we did. We didn't have to arm wrestle or anything. Okay. Monica, do you guys have any questions about that? The process or anything? Okay. So, Roxanne. Monica, do you want to give us the Ebola and flu update?
Love to. So we're in the middle, or in the flu season. Generally that happens between October and May. But in both Washington and Clark County, we still have had very, very low levels of influenza reported. So we haven't yet entered an actual flu season in this area yet.
Yeah.
However,
no.
It's still a great time to get your flu vaccine if you haven't gotten it, or if people you work with or people work for you. Encouraging to be vaccinated. On Ebola, outbreak continues to occur in West Africa and the three main affected countries, but it is declining in terms of the numbers reported per week, which is a great sign that they're starting to get a control on it. People returning from those countries to the United States are now being monitored for 21 days by their local health department. So Clark County will do the same. If we have somebody who returns from those countries, we'll monitor them for 21 days. A few weeks ago, we had a planning meeting with a lot of our key partners in the county, including Peace Health, to come up and agree on scenario-specific response flows in the event we ever had a positive case in our county, and how that process would go from point of identification to point of care. Other than that, there hasn't been a huge number of updates at the local level. We continue to communicate with our partners and send out updates as they come from CDC and from the Department of Health in Washington. Any questions on Ebola?
Do we have any statistics on the number of patients or people that actually get vaccinated in Clark County?
A number of patients who get vaccinated?
Yeah.
And
age groups? Do we have all the statistics?
So we have statistics. Through the state immunization database, we can access statistics on that, but I wouldn't necessarily say they're comprehensive statistics for the counties, because it's only people who go through certain channels that those statistics are entered into the database, and it's only if that provider enters in that immunization
so
database.
So it's not, it doesn't include pharmacies and
it can.
Private practices and all that?
It just depends on who is reporting online. So the state has an immunization information system, and it's transitioning from paper-based system to an electronic system in terms of the reporting component. So there's sort of this gap in comprehensive reporting, but it's getting better. So hopefully in a few years we'll have a really robust system.
Great. Thanks, Monica. So we didn't have much to say about Commissioner Stewart, other than to say, those of you that live in Clark County may have heard that Commissioner, is it Jeannie or Jeannie?
I think it's Jeannie.
Jeannie Stewart won the election for the commissioner position that's currently being held by Ed Barnes and previously Steve Stewart. Julie, did you find out officially her first day?
No.
She's sworn in November 25th.
I knew it was pretty soon because Commissioner Barnes already had the farewell for him this week.
Yeah. I'm sure they were in a hurry for that. And so just wanted to let you know that we intend to do a public health orientation with her. We'll have her meet with leadership team and then meet staff, management group, get a tour. And then we're planning to probably have next spring the Public Health Advisory Council meet with the full board of health and do a chance to orient them. And sometime January, February, we'll start talking about what we want that to look like. I think at a past Board of Health session that they came to, we showed them clips from unnatural causes. So we might want to think about other kind of topics we want to engage them in this next round. That's all I had to say about Commissioner Stewart. Unless anybody else has something to add about her.
Executive Committee update. Nominations Committee. Sandy, Joe, and Karen, or what are all the update regards to
so we have a slate of officers to present that we will vote on at our January meeting. And Julie, did we get, are we okay with everybody? Okay. So the slate that we're putting forward from the nominating committee is as chair, Trevor Evers, to continue in that role. As vice chair is Mark. And as member at large, Karen Evans, who's not here this evening, but she's been on the council for a year. And, so those are the three names that we're putting forward as the ballot for the slate for nominations in January. And of course, other people, you know, call for other nominations if other people would want to run, but that's the slate that we're forwarding from our record-breaking nominations committee meeting. Do let us know if you're interested. If you're interested, I need to be involved in the next time we do this.
If you are involved, I assume they reach out to you directly, Julie, and you push that information to the nomination committee, or how's that?
Thus far, that hasn't occurred. No one's like volunteered.
Best case scenario. Okay. Great. So if there is any interest, or if you want to nominate or make a recommendation, please feel free to reach out to Julie, and she'll get that to the nomination committee, and we'll take that into consideration in January and vote. Great. Thanks for volunteering. Appreciate it. ACES developed a logic model and the framework.
Yay.
Janice's show. No pressure.
Last time I tried to steal it from Trevor, so this time Trevor's just like, you just do it. brought my own markers and everything. So the first thing I thought we could do is go over briefly what we talked about around ACES at our retreat in September, I think that was, what we talked about in October, and kind of where we left everything. So can you guys see this? Can you hold it? Don volunteered to help me tonight. His first job is to keep me from running into the TV again. So, thank you, Trevor. Oh, is that okay?
That work?
Okay. So at the retreat in September, we had Laura Porter came down and we spent a good, 4 hours together, 3 or 4 hours together, to learn more about ACES and start talking about how do we implement this knowledge and what we've learned in our own lives, in our own work environments and communities. So some of the goals that we came up there were to establish a coalition or work group to provide training and examine systems that serve people and serve people. We said we wanted to consider develop an overarching plan for multi-sector, multidisciplinary efforts. Wanted to get the word out. Wanted to train law enforcement on how to work with, particularly I think we talked about juveniles, but people that have high ACE scores. We wanted to adapt services to achieve a fit between ACE's effects and services or supports. And we wanted to promote and support systematic use of intervention strategies with solid evaluation focused on learning. I don't know what that means. I was reading those the other day, and I was like, I'm not sure what we're talking about. So the other thing we did at the retreat is we said, what are some of the strategies? And I wrote purpose here because to me this kind of feeds into really more of a purpose statement, why we would do this. But we said we wanted to educate and engage, develop professional skills and abilities, assure preventive support for people affected by ACEs, and create a platform for systematic and continuous learning about what works for whom in what context. And then last month, we really started the conversation, I think, about what does this look like? I mean, how would we make this happen? And some of the strategies we came up with were perhaps a task force or coalition, having FAC or Public Health Advisory Council champions, doing a pilot program, getting some grant funding to support work, possibly a summit, and to make sure that we had metrics so we could measure the impact of any kind of strategies that we implemented.
And then we said, this month or November, what we wanted to do is how do we want to take these goals and move them into strategies, actual planning, and how fast we'll move this forward. So when the executive committee met, one of the things we talked about was, and I think this was Julie's brain development, brainchild. So if you don't like it, it's her fault. Was that we would develop a logic model, which we have done as a group before. There's a board back there for some of the new folks if you haven't seen it. And that is the Public Health Advisory Logic Model. And it's really, it's a very basic logic model. So what is a logic model? It's really but just a visual communication of what you're trying to achieve or your hypothesis. If we do this, this is what we believe is going to be the result or the outcome. I think it can be used for many things. It can be used for planning, communication, orientation and training, monitoring and evaluation, and grant applications. We've used them before for grant applications. I think they're really valuable for that also. Most of you have probably seen the more traditional logic model. It goes left to right, and it is input, activities, output, short, medium, long-term outcomes. But one of the things, I did a training at OMSI on logic models, and one of the things they were talking about is how creative a logic model can be. And every grant they apply for, they do a different kind of logic model. And it really, for me, was really helpful to expand my thinking about logic models. You really can adjust them or do anything you want with them just so they're useful for what you're trying to do. The model that we use for that logic model, I changed it a little bit for today, but we're going to try and follow that kind of model because I think it's real basic and easy to follow. And I think one of the goals of doing a logic model is to bridge the gap between strategic planning and operational planning. And so that's what I'm hoping the outcome of this exercise will be. So that's a pretty quick recap. Do you guys have any questions, thoughts, concerns? Yep, I'm happy with Julie for coming up with this idea. Okay.
But at least they like the pie, right? I stayed up all night making that.
Okay, so one of the things Jeff and I were talking, we thought it might be easiest to start with some of the outcomes because we've been thinking about that a little bit more. So one of the things in this model that they, a way to talk about it is talk about what's the direction of change you want to create. Is it increase, decrease, improve, reduce? I mean, there's all different kinds of ways to describe this. What effort do you intend to change? Or what is it that you're hoping to change? And is it a long-term or short-term outcome? In this model, I should read what I wrote down just to make sure I describe it correctly. Short-term outcomes are the direct results of the efforts on its participants. So it's really those things that you can hold yourselves accountable for. I mean, you're never going to have a total one-to-one relationship, but generally that's what you can be held accountable for. Long-term outcomes reflect the social and economic consequences of the broader community. So this is the things you're trying to influence, but there's so many other factors you may not be able to have a strong impact. And in this model, they also say the big difference between short-term and long-term outcomes is more sequential than time-bound. So I started with an example, and I got this out of the notes from our retreat in October. And one of the things we talked about, you probably can't, can you read the orange writing there? Okay, that's what I was going to say. We said, essentially, we wanted to decrease the number of high ACE scores in the next generation. And that would be a long-term goal because there's We can influence that, but there's so many other factors that are also going to influence that. So what I was hoping is we could try maybe doing some brainstorms, just broadly. What do you think some of the efforts of the Public Health Advisory Council, what are some of the things you'd like to see change in our community around ACEs?
An emphasis on early, increased emphasis on early learning. You know, because of all the science on, you know, what we know about early learning and brain development and ACEs. And there is a lot of work, you know, as you've heard me talk before, yep, about this going on in the community that we need to collaborate with those.
Absolutely. And would you consider that a shorter or long term?
There could be some. A short-term aspect could be back to our goal of establishing a coalition, but a long-term would be actually, you know, increasing the universal child care, kindergarten readiness, all those different kinds of things that are being looked at by some of the groups in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we, as the Public Health Advisory Council, have the ability to, you know, again, we have the voice with the commissioners as eventually we move forward to some kind of sustainable public funding for this.
So what I heard towards the end of that is really increase Board of Health's understanding of ACEs as it relates to
policymakers, not just okay. the board, but the policymakers. Our particular group is, of course, the Board of Health, Board of County Commissioners. But in general, our policymakers.
I guess it'd be the understanding and importance.
And it's not just, it is policymakers, and we've already identified law enforcement, you know, the criminal justice system, you know, with judges need to understand about it.
I think that could be a short term. So maybe a follow up to that is just increase understanding the importance of ACEs with community stakeholders? Would that to try and capture all the people you listed?
Well, and as well, you know, if we think about our first one about the next generation, it's with the people who are going to produce the next generation, you know, young adults, you know, teens and young adults, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure, you know, parenting is a big piece of that. So it's not just community stakeholders, it's the people who are going to produce the next generation, you know, the young adults and the teens and young adults that will eventually become parents.
Generation, I would say decrease truancy and increase graduations.
Excellent.
You could have teen suicide, teen pregnancy.
Yeah.
You could have a lot of indicators there.
One thing that goes up again, increase just as you're talking, is that increased kindergarten readiness. So very specifically, you know, 40% of kids in our community are not ready for kindergarten. And we know that predicts, that can ultimately predict as to graduation.
So let's step back just for a second. These are all outcomes that you would hope the efforts of this council is going to influence. Excellent.
I don't know if it'd be increase or decrease, but bringing together different partners that are involved in ways to mm-hmm. decrease ACEs. So.
Yeah, that's our main partnerships. For collaboration, maybe.
I would think that would be a short-term goal. Yes.
Cindy? Well, I'm just thinking, I think there's kind of two different things I could think about. One is the outcomes, which would be like your graduation, but then there's other things like family resiliency, reduced stress to families, so, you know, which is...
Increase family resiliency?
Maybe, but that's kind of ambiguous.
Well, we're just brainstorming now. We'll go through. There's several steps with this.
So like reducing the impact of poverty and stressors, such as all the ACEs stressors.
How about something about increasing education for parents? Mm-hmm. Or is that?
Is that future present parents?
Oh, future parents. I didn't see that one. Okay. Well, maybe current parents too. Young parents.
Yeah.
In one community, they're focusing on foster parents because foster parents are not ACEs informed. So they're doing a lot of education with foster parents and then with the birth parents when the kids are reintroduced back to the birth family to help them understand what the child's gone through and how to reintegrate that child. That's kind of cool.
Other outcomes?
In along the lines of the family, I think, it's not only the education component with parents, but there seems to be something along the lines that families, parents, they need somebody to walk with them. A lot of times it's one thing to have knowledge, it's another thing that in the midst of all the daily stressors and all those things, to have people that come alongside you and in the midst of the chaos say, hey, it's okay, slow down. Let's walk through this. And, especially nowadays when grandparents and parents don't live anywhere close to each other or that those relationships can be strained to begin with. The thought occurred to me like an adoptive, the lunch buddies. kind of like an adopted another, set of parents buddies kind of thing. Just to have people in the community be able to walk through that.
So Craig, I put community sport mentoring for families.
Sure.
Does that capture it?
Yeah, it captures it, yeah.
And I think like the next step down from that could be something like your very specific ideas of how you would, like lunch buddies or...
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is a little off the subject, but we just received notification not too long ago that Battle Ground School District was selected to be one of three districts in the state in the President's AWARE grant, which means that in part, we will be doing youth mental health first aid training for lots of people in that community. So youth mental health first aid is a training that lets people go through just to see signs and symptoms, like CPR, kind of thing, but like that, like you're not supposed to do therapy with kids, but just if you see a child or youth that's in trouble, you know how to get them to something, help or something like that. So it seems like it's along the line of them mentoring, supporting, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, but it's a focus, very focused program. Well, yeah, it's for anyone, though, that works with any youth, and the ability to just pick out, teaching the layperson just how to work with them so that they can get into services earlier or, keep kids from getting down the road and being in real trouble and their parents. So it's kind of a... I don't know if it would reduce ACEs, but it certainly says this kid's in trouble. Hey, let's try to respond in an appropriate manner. Help out.
So, Sandy, I kind of summarized that as increased connecting higher-risk youth with community support and services.
Okay.
Or youth and their family, probably, huh? Or
well, just the youth. I mean, we can focus that way. That's good.
What about reducing the potential for ACEs there's an interface with law enforcement, courts, that sort of thing, for both youth and families.
Reduce
ACEs impact for youth and families when there's a law enforcement issue or in a criminal situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just share, too, that the thinking on a state and national level right now is to do the two-pronged approach, where you don't focus only on the children and not the adults, but you're dealing with ACEs for both age groups. So, yeah.
Another thing, I think it gets to what Betsy was saying about collaboration, and one of the things that we talked about in our retreat was we need to make this multi-sector, multi-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the public health people or the early learning, it's business, it's government, it's law enforcement, and we need to think beyond just the boundaries of the people that know about early, or mm-hmm. that know about ACEs, you know, the early learning professionals and, you know, healthcare people. We need to expand it to business and a nonprofit world, so the multi-sector, multi-discipline.
And I think even educating those people, too, because I think a lot of them are already working and kind of doing some of this ACE work. They just don't know that's what they're doing. And so helping them be more effective in how they're doing it.
Yeah, faith community.
Should we have anything about substance abuse and addressing that somehow? Because that is one of the ACE risk factors for ACE. So maybe... more programs, perhaps increase the number of programs that address substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Or resources.
And I think if Dr. Melnick were here, he would remind us that he sees that work on AIDS has helped us, that it moves us into chronic disease prevention. So over the course of time, we can see a direction in some of the chronic disease in our community. You know, whether that's substance use disorders or congestive heart failure, or just certain chronic disease measures. That's super long term.
Extra long term.
Could also include them there, increase the number of ACEs, so we're medical providers as well. And I know it's not just medical, but if we could.
Sort of like that medical system.
In the medical system side, yeah.
Because it would also maybe be first responders, right?
Yeah, yeah. Providers, if they were screening patients for ACEs and then providing referral. Or
is that like, would that be trauma-informed?
Yeah, care. Yeah. So, and reducing homelessness would be really important too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running out of room. I think that means we're done.
Yeah.
Well, just like Cindy said, it's reducing homelessness, it's reducing hunger. You know, those measures that we have about people in our community who are homeless and hungry. So put up their hunger, too.
Oh. So one of the... how I kind of envision this happening is we'll put together a bunch of information tonight, and I'll be bringing it back to you in January, and then we can talk about how we might be able to implement this. I think Julie put a, what did you call it? A teaser, I guess, in the email with the agenda. There might be a potential for some funding to do some work. Cindy, were we approached by the Community Health Foundation? They're interested in funding some ACEs work. And so Cindy and Alan had an initial conversation with them, and then we're supposed to meet with them next week or the week after that to continue the conversation. And so all this information we're collecting from you will be incorporating into that. So, and I'm sure we could have an outcomes endlessly. I mean, we could go on and on and on. So we'll just, this kind of just get us started, really thinking about why this work, why we want to do it, why it's important. So part of the logic model process is say, what are the components? What are the groups of work or activity that
are going to lead us to these outcomes. And just to get us started, the one that immediately comes to me is education. Because we're talking a lot about educating people, helping them to better understand. What are some other, do you see other components in this of groups of activities that might someone might engage in to reach these outcomes?
Resources.
Collaboration.
The access and availability of resources to support building resiliency, homelessness, hunger, you know. And sometimes there's gaps in resources that we have, just like what Sandy talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's a matter of just knowing it exists and making a referral to the right source. So the whole piece of resources.
Mm-hmm. And then, Don, you said collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I think innovation and measurement are really, the measurement piece really seems to be missing right now for a lot of communities that are trying different pilot projects, and I think that's really what we need. Also, the support of our elected officials, and we're working on that at local level as well as the state level. There's a lot going on at the state level to look for funding for these support teams.
Innovation.
Well, here's my question though. Is innovation a group of activities or innovation a part of all of our activities?
Yeah.
It's almost a value.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's add values. And I might just put evaluation there too. Right, because that I think that's a good point, Joan.
Well, and the whole issue of we can't do alone, we have partnerships and collaboration. Even though we need to do some work in that area, that is a value that we pull. That we can convene partners. Yeah, that's something we have the ability to do as a council, as well as using our voice with the commissioners very thoughtfully.
I'm putting advocating as a value, being able to influence. So let's see, any other components you can think of? So, what time is it? I'm going to have us do a next step. And this can be iterative. We can go back and forth if you're not feeling like we're ready to do that. But the next step really is to, I'm running out of colors, is to take these components and start thinking about, so these are the components. And the next piece is to think about is activities and target groups. And so what I'm going to propose is we break into maybe three or four groups, and each group take one of these components. And for example, we can do one together first, just to, what am I going to write? Oh.
There's a whole whiteboard over here.
Can everybody see that whiteboard down there?
Mm-hmm.
No, I love the whiteboard. Okay. Thank you, Trevor. In this model, they call it CAP, which is component, activity, target group.
Let's say the component is education. An activity might be training law enforcement. And the target would be maybe law enforcement judges. Is that like the ones that are on the street? Is that what they're called? I mean,
officers.
Police officers.
Police officers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it depends on how specific you wanted to get. You could just say community police. You know, the people that are assigned to do community. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may not have your police that are assigned to desk necessarily getting this training. Initially, you might want it to be your people that are out on the street dealing with families. So does that make sense? And so we'd have one group be looking at education, one group looking at resource acquisition to support resiliency, a group looking at collaboration and partnership, and then one looking at intervention. And you'll be saying, okay, what are some of the activities that we might engage in to get this to happen, and who would be the group that we would be targeting? Does this feel doable to y'all? Okay, so let's do group here, a group on that corner, a group on this corner, and a group along here.
We're not there.
What?
Here.
Group there.
Group there.
Yeah. So these four, this four, and this.
And do we have an assignment?
Okay, so we will have.
We want to do collaboration.
Okay. Yay!
Initiative!
Okay. Because Bryce is in this group, we're going to let you guys do education. This group is going to do collaboration. What do you guys want to do? They don't get a say. You're between resource acquisition and intervention.
Resource, I guess.
Resources, okay, and then you guys will be intervention. So we'll take what? We'll check in 15 minutes, see where people are. If you're like, this is too painful, we'll come back later. Just use a piece of paper if you need paper.
It's your forte. It's your passion.
That's what's going to come.
Education.
It needs to be my passion.
Social media coordinator.
Yes, do it
again. Oh, yeah, you guys go together. I'm assuming yes. You guys.
We're at that.
Intervention. So, what's an example of an intervention, like a community, like a.
developing intervention. One activity might be doing research on what are other reviewing the literature, interviewing, surveying, you know, all kinds of to really learn what are the and maybe we
that's another component is research.
You know, well, I think let's change this to
best practice.
Yeah.
Okay, because I just understood the term. I thought literally like going out when a family's having a meltdown and doing a home visit. That's like an intervention.
Yeah, I
wasn't
quite sure how to answer the question. So you guys can
do it. Okay.
It's really about getting. Identify what it is and what we can do. Implementation. I don't know. It is a tough one.
Okay.
Hey, why don't you guys get around here?
Why don't you come on the other side of the room?
Yeah.
Okay.
I gotta figure out what you wrote, Kim. I can't see
Well, that. I can take a picture of
I cannot read what you said down there.
It's okay. It really is.
Okay. All right. All right.
They're not going to let my court please, yeah. Does.
Right, and doing Perfection, and it's not static, it's really just
kind of getting a feel for what you're trying to communicate. So what I was thinking is we'll just start by everybody sharing a little bit about what they saw of some of the activities and who they thought those activities would be for. Let's say each group gives five, their, what they think are their best five. That work?
Sure.
So we will start with education. So what are five activities, if you have five activities?
You like Ironton. I'll blow mine. Boom!
No showing off. What are five activities and target groups you guys came up with?
We had education. So one of the major activities that we had was teacher training and consequently student education with that. Within those spheres of influence, you touch on a massive number of individuals, really kind of the target individuals in society. And so making teachers aware of what's going on. My mom's a teacher, and Mr. Harbison's sister, I believe,
and brother-in-law
are both teachers as well, and they have no knowledge of ACEs or its effect in the community. So making them aware, and then consequently helping students to become aware of kind of what it is and what resources are in place for them to help with treatment. Another one that was kind of given to us, but a very valuable one, was law enforcement. Again, just kind of educating law enforcers and officers in the area that work on the streets and work with people in the general public and kind of helping those people that they interact with to be aware of the resources and things that are available to them. Another one that we touched on was working with healthcare providers and there's kind of a two-part component with that. First one was working with prenatal mothers or expectant mothers to kind of help them, steer them in the right direction as far as being high risk, steer them in the right direction so that they don't place their new child into an adverse situation. Or on the flip side of that, helping healthcare providers work with individuals who have already been afflicted by adverse situations. And again, that would just be a simple education program for the healthcare providers and then those individuals kind of distributing that knowledge to the individuals that they interact with throughout their working. And then one of the major ones, again, that Charvison was touching on was media, massive media campaigns. That is how you massively spread influence to individuals. Most people, again, don't know about ACEs. And so spreading the knowledge that this is a problem, but there are resources out there to individuals to help kickstart the community mentality, thinking in that respect.
Great.
One last one that I want to throw out there was philanthropy, trying to educate nonprofit organizations to help fund these things and that sort.
Interesting. That's great. Thank you, guys.
Oh.
If that was only five, and you got the bonus.
Oh, we snuck in six.
Okay. Collaboration, partnerships.
Well, I guess I'll speak and then I'm going to ask Greg because he took notes. We think that we can't do this alone and that we need to, getting back to the first thing we identified at our retreat, we need to convene a group of people in the community who've identified, a lot of them are identified from our retreat, CEL, VHA, ESD, Early Interventional, LULAC, their name of actually to convene them to create something, a placeholder to be a 10-year plan to reduce ACEs and build resiliency in our community. Much like I shared with you last time what this community did many years ago with initiating the plan, the 10-year plan to end homelessness. And so if we could get our community partners together, because a lot of groups are working on this right now, and they're working in silos, and what we have as the Public Health Council is we have the opportunity to bring them together and have everybody sort of developing the same plan, not saying don't want to stop work that groups are doing, but at least have everybody working from a similar type of master plan for our community, what we can do for our community mm-hmm. to reduce ACEs and build resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
So we then we talk about some other things.
I think it's really where we led into. The collaboration, that's a no-brainer part. Then the question becomes, the next question was how do we start that collaboration off? Because at least the question that I was raising, you know, since we started our retreat back in September, we've been on this path that's continuing here tonight. So all these other organizations, they're on the same path that we're on. So how do we take other organizations which are going to have commonalities within differences and then try to bring them into a collaboration without having to go back and restart this whole process for all the organizations again all together, but then being able to prudently pull everybody's place wherever they're at in the process in and forming it together into a universal process without having to go back and do this whole thing together again for multiple organizations.
You don't want to go through all this again?
Well, no, no, no.
I actually like it, but...
If we talked about it, you would have to be a very astute planning committee to be able to create that kind of a thing so that it's not just 15 agencies doing show and tell.
Right.
But actually have a straw man proposal, which we could provide, and then begin to build it, move forward from what we create tonight as a straw man, and then it becomes bigger than what's owned by the FAC. It becomes owned by the community, and that we sort of as the FAC nurture it and maintain, keep it moving, much like the Council for the Homeless did for the 10-year plan to end homelessness. That's just a model that has worked in this community because we do have a strong history of collaboration among our nonprofits and our school districts, public health, ESD, all of these groups that we have. That's why I wanted to be on this group because I wanted to be. That's my editor.
You can do it all.
Did you have any others you wanted to add?
No, that was a thrust of our conversation. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, guys. So you guys had a tough one.
Yeah, ours was resource
acquisition to support resiliency.
Got looking at it in terms of not necessarily the monies and everything, but there's a lot of resources already out there. Just to pick a few would be the teachers, churches, healthcare, school and private counselors, and nonprofit groups that are already in existence that assist the local lower social and economic class group. Then we got looking at the resources too. You could identify state, local, federal monies. We kind of thought if there was a person that really was an expert at finding where you had to go look for and obtain grants, that could be something real critical. Also, it wasn't always financial. There's probably groups that could do a lot of in-kind services that, you know, somebody can train or they can, you know, they can do a lot, but it doesn't cost a whole lot. Some good resources too would be the free health clinics, WSU. I guess they have programs that they pick special projects. And, you know, what's good about that is they probably got some monies plus publicity and everything to go along with it. So you kind of broke up in those two ways. So,
excellent.
Anybody else have any questions?
Great. I'm so impressed with the work that you guys are doing on this. This is awesome. So this group, they had a tough one too.
We did, a little bit, but I think it makes sense. So we talked about best practice or interventions, kind of lumped together. So we said, well, really to identify what are best practice interventions for addressing ACEs, we need to do a good, thorough literature review, do a study of emerging research by talking to experts in the field and look at what they've found, what they're recommending, establish some baseline data, and then surveying for interest and commitment in the community and see who's really committed to working on this, survey promising approaches that are already in existence within our community, and also surveying existing ACEs-informed approaches that are taking place. And the target would be our FAC. Of course, we'd share that this information would be inform us and what we want to do next. Our decision makers in the community, our funders, our elected officials, and the public health department and other agencies and organizations in the community. And I just wanted to add also, I think I mentioned in the past meeting that our maternal child health block grant is a large focus on ACEs as well. And because of that, this talk has been taken to the Healthy Neighborhood Coalition. A lot of you folks have been to that. It's a very neutral ground for bringing together a lot of organizations. And they decided their last meeting to really adopt ACEs as their focus too. So that might be a forum where we could kind of spin off of that and start, you know, so just a thought. That might be a good place for convening some of the folks that you're talking about. So.
A lot of information. So Julie's capturing all this for us.
Every once in a while somebody gets to talking just a little too fast.
Oh, I'll give you my notes.
But yeah, if you have notes, you can give them to us, and that might help us too as we start putting this together.
That'd be good.
Bring back to you.
So can I just add, in terms of best practices, one of the things that we know there are best practices that public health is doing right now. Mm-hmm. There's family partnership and the Love Talk Play program, which are existing resources that we know are evidence based and are producing outcomes. And so, you know, we want to make sure one of the strategies is we want to make sure we don't, but public health doesn't take any more horrendous budget cuts, and that those programs are put at risk. And now that's something that we as the FAC can do, is advocate for programs that we know are making a difference in this area. Mm-hmm. when the budget cycle rolls around. So that's and again, it gets back to our value of advocacy. We don't want to lose some of the good things we've got going right here in our own public health department.
Well, I think many times people are working with ACEs already, but nobody's using the term.
Right.
And if you get that term out where everybody knows about it, it's an increased awareness.
Yeah.
Good point.
Well, you know, I remember when I first started hearing about ACEs, I was like, I don't even want to hear this, because I thought this is the new flavor of the month. I mean, you know, there's always some kind of word that's hip that everybody's doing at the time, and I thought, you know, I'll just wait till it happens. But the more I've learned about it, the more I can see how it's involved in everything we do. I do think more and more people are going to start tuning in and engaging in the conversation. So,
well, it is changing the paradigm of healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, if Alan were here tonight, he'd be reminding us, we address ACEs, we're dealing with, it's a chronic disease prevention model. It's not just focusing on kids, it has lifelong consequences.
And that's the neurodegenerative piece, the inheritability.
And that's the thing, I mean, part of it, real quick, is we put the ACEs as a problem, which it is. But on the other side of that coin, it's also an answer. Because it's the answer of how do we address chronic health issues. And so, specifically addressing it to, you know, health systems, Peace Health, you know, Legacy, and say, look, we know this is a problem, we all do. Here's a solution to this problem. Invest into the solution. It's outside of the box.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a very good solution. And so, taking this education piece to the health systems, getting them hooked up into it and wrapped around the axle will really help propel this motion along, or this movement.
Yeah. And so, listening to you guys, I'm coming back to some of the strategies that one of the things I hope to do tonight is some of this work that we treat, has felt kind of disjointed to me. We talked about things like, where's it going? So I want to bring us back to work we've already done, that we're not starting over from scratch every meeting, if it feels that way. But I think a lot of what we've talked about tonight in terms of what would go in a logic model fits under these strategies that we talked about at the October meeting, but also what we talked about at the retreat. And so as I was going through these and thinking about, I mean, grant funding, we have potential opportunity now. I mean, they're interested, they want to hear what we have going on. We know there's several groups working in coalition. Part of that is just really coordinating efforts, right? I mean, that's collaboration partnerships. How do we build on each other? And it's also somewhat under resource acquisition, right? It's like, how do we build on each other's resources so that we have a greater piece? So the one thing about all this work that I've really struggled with is it still feels really overwhelming to me. It's so huge, and we could go in so many directions. And so I started thinking about going back to our retreat and what some of the retreat goals that we had. Getting the word out, training law enforcement. All these could be done, perhaps, on a smaller scale. Right? Like, do we have to look at Clark County as a whole?
us thinking about P4HN. So we have a program in public health called Partnerships for Healthy Neighborhoods. They really looked at the demographics of our county, said, where are our highest needs? Let's do a pilot program. Let's focus on one neighborhood and see if we can make an impact. We can develop some metrics. We can have a summit if we wanted to, or come up with a task force of, and which they did, of people in that community, the people actually that were trying to help included. So one of the things I started thinking about is that something you guys might want to consider, is looking at, can we take all this work we're doing and test it out in a smaller geographic area rather than looking at the whole county and everything the county does at once. Almost like prioritizing.
So build on something we're already doing, perhaps?
Or where we've already had expressed interest. Mm-hmm.
The problem is we don't see a return on that in a short time. You know, that, I mean, you begin to see, I mean, most of these outcomes up there are L's. And so a pilot study could go on for several years in one neighborhood. And that's the, are we really learning something then, or is it better to maybe do something? And this is where I know the Regional Health Alliance has talked about a pilot that Sandy talked about.
Right.
Self, Children Can't Wait talking about a pilot. So actually partnering to do a pilot maybe with other entities, and the idea of doing something and measuring it and knowing if it works, maybe not measuring the outcomes, but measuring some of the process and maybe some of the shorter term metrics would work, that then we could apply elsewhere.
Yes.
But I wouldn't want it to just be us, because there's other entities that,
yes,
are looking at grant funding for pilots as well. So.
It, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I do think pilots are easier to get funded because you can show that you've made that impact. But
I think that the Public Health Advisory should support any organization that has ACE as a focus. So even if public health did a pilot that got funded or received funding, that we, you know, part of our agenda would be to throw our support behind whoever's doing whatever they're doing.
Write letters of support or whatever,
right,
for anybody that's doing it.
You know, or even letters to the editor saying, you know, this group, Public Health Advisory, sees such value in education around this issue and our belief that it will, you know, change the world, whatever, that we want to support it. And these organizations are all moving forward in it. You know, that is collective impact, mm-hmm, the idea of moving, mm-hmm, forward in a way that has synergy.
It's also advocating. So if a group comes to us and says, hey, we're doing this pilot, can you support this? If it meets, you know, this master plan that we have, it's like, yes, so we're advocating for that. By writing a letter of support for their grant,
mm-hmm, or whatever. Yeah, so I think I know that pilots are almost the only way you're going to secure additional funding for something. So I don't want to say that that's not a good way to go,
mm-hmm,
but that we believe that any way you go, this is the emphasis that you're trying to move forward with doing. Mm-hmm. Or just a suggestion.
What about, so the other thing I was thinking about was, what about people who are here representing their organizations? Like, could we provide support as an organization staff? I was thinking like Bob Richardson. Mm-hmm. Like, he's expressed a lot of interest in possibly developing a training program for his police department in Battleground. Is that something like this council could rally around with these values, looking at some of the activities that we identified and trying to move something like that forward?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, but not all of us represent an organization, but
right,
law enforcement is one where clearly that was identified as one of our goals, and I think that would be a phenomenal place for us to start, is to help develop a training module through the Law Enforcement Council that Bob is there, you know, for,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and to help spread that out, knowing that that's, again, another piece that could make a difference. And we've already identified that as one of the things we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you use the word training module, No, I keep thinking we want to get to the really young parents. Is some way, you know, if you have a pilot program, there's so many other young parents out there. So if you don't want to narrow ourselves to a pilot program, on it, but, you know, if you had an ACES training module or module for people's mm-hmm. young parents to see or something, I don't know where I'm going with this, but something along that line.
Well, I could totally see, isn't there a high school here that has a program for pregnancy?
Yeah, the grads program. There's Evergreen and
Bay. Yeah. Evergreen.
There's both the Evergreen Bay. And Vancouver have grads.
Well, there's programs. A Henry O. Lacks magnet school for health professions. We could actually work with them on mm-hmm. a module to train all those people that are going in, students that are going into health professions. That's a place mm-hmm. we'd be very interested in this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking in terms of what Mark was saying, though, about trying to reach young parents. That would be, to me, high schools like that, that you could do a pilot program.
If they have a high teen, like in Bob's area, I think there's a high teen pregnancy rate. You probably know more about what's going on up there. They have a high teen suicide rate, I think. They have a lot of issues that would maybe be addressed through schools and law enforcement, maybe juvenile court, I don't know, some kind of partnership. And I just would add, too, that I really love that point that you made about wouldn't want it to be just a public health program, but that's exactly how public health works, is through partners, you know? So you're exactly right. It would be through the partners that the work gets done, so.
Would it be beneficial to have, I mean, I think it'd be interesting to have a list of all the different organizations that we know of that are working with ACEs. I mean, some of these I have even heard of, and they might be places that we can direct people who are looking for support, or, you know, if there is a grant, you can connect organizations that might be connected with mm-hmm. them.
So what I'm going to propose, and thank you everybody for being so engaged tonight, this is really cool. I'm going to propose we put together a logic model. Patricia, I can't do everything but Cindy tonight. Cindy and I will be meeting with the Community Health Foundation. This information is going to be so helpful for us as we go to meet with them and thinking about what you guys want to support, what you're interested in. I think, too, Bryce, like you were talking about teachers and educators, I think there's still more work that we can do. And think about that. What can you bring back to this group and say, you, as a council, could really help this effort that I'm thinking about? Or, boy, I really know that the PTA at Columbia River, my stepdaughter goes there, I should know, at Columbia River is really interested in ACEs, or I think they should be interested in ACEs. And would you be willing, is anybody here at this table willing to come and talk to that group? So, I mean, I think there's these big opportunities, but I also think there's opportunities for us to work together as a council to start moving forward on some of these things.
Well, we had many, many more than five, so we had a lot of resources as far as people that need to be educated or groups that need to be educated.
Right, and I think that's the other piece, though, is thinking about what are our resources, what is our capacity. I mean, I think some of these things are going to be huge, and so how do we break it into pieces where it's manageable, you know? And that's where we start getting into those activities, and I'm thinking maybe next time what we want to do is start looking at those activities and say, which ones are doable? Which ones do we think we really want to push forward at this point? Which ones do we think we might be able to get funding for? Which would you like staff here to start pursuing a little bit more, investigating more with the resources we have? So
I still think we want to do that. We want to bring in partners to help us with this.
Oh, I agree.
So that we have a coordinated effort.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it may mean that, you know, some group backs, so if there's a grant opportunity and three agencies are going for the same grant opportunity, that you might want to say, you take the lead on this, we'll support you, and next time you support. I mean, it's just that whole collaboration piece, who's best positioned, how can we benefit the community, you know, if there's, and that takes, and I think this community is ready for that, because we have a history of collaboration.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about, because I've been thinking about the fact that Bob has
several times mentioned his interest in getting some law enforcement training, something around that area. We have a partner who's willing interested, and then we have Sandy start talking tonight about this effort she's working on, and immediately I started going, wow, is there some way we might be able to coordinate what's happening with law enforcement with what's happening in the schools? How cool would that be? And then you're talking about homeless families. I mean, when you start looking at everybody in Battleground who's doing work around ACEs, and if we could bring them together and make, I mean, that might be really cool in a way to demonstrate how this can be done. And it wouldn't be just public health, right? It's just...
You know, one other thing I was just going to throw in there, that that particular proposal for Battleground, too, would also tend to kind of bring it right back to the suicide issue that was really at the forefront, you know, especially in Battleground. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a real concern about youth suicide in the Battleground area. Wasn't there like 6 or 7 suicides within a short time?
Yeah.
A year or so ago.
Yeah, and they actually convened a group of community people to try to address it. And
well, yeah, the grant that we wrote and received $10 million, so $1.95 million a year for 5 years in a row. And there are only 3 school districts in the state of Washington that were selected to participate in that, and one of those is Battleground. And I will add that we wrote it in July, and the other 2 districts we chose were Shelton and Marysville. So we got the grant, and the day we were convening in Olympia with the superintendents, where that superintendent was 2 hours out of district, was the day the call came in about the active shooting. So it's been quite a ride, actually, and it will be very... But those 3 districts are now in a 5-year process with our Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. So, and my job is shifting to be the manager of that grant for the next 5 years for Battleground School District. So, but we are currently involved in a needs assessment and environmental scan and cannot go forward with the feds in terms of releasing that money until we get that done. So there's a lot of information that's going into that needs assessment environmental scan piece right now. Mm-hmm. And then Battleground's portion of that money is only about, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of half to three-quarters of $1 million a year. But you can imagine as word gets out that I'm kind of involved in this, that everyone wants something. But it is going to be a unique opportunity to do some really cool work in that community and to focus. And the grant is focused on violence prevention and mental health. And so to come back to the question, yes.
Wouldn't that be a nice tie-in?
The reason Battleground was selected and we had the needs assessment to go forward to apply for the money was because they had a number of youth suicides, in addition to other factors. But that's my little Battleground question. I'm sure providing more information as time goes on.
Great. So we will send out whatever the logic model or draft before the January meeting. Since we're not meeting in December, we're expecting you all to dedicate 2 hours of your time.
Sandy's looking like, are you kidding?
Oh my God.
And was there any other last comments, thoughts about this before I pass
the contract?
Is that a hand
grade
or
a... It's just kind of an associated... Oh, sidebar. I was at the commission at the evening tonight, right before this meeting. We were talking about public or mental health and the need to improve it in our county. And I made the suggestion to them that how we're working on ACEs and how mental health is going to be working into this eventually. And when that eventually comes around, that since they meet on Tuesday nights right around our time, it might be prudent to invite them to a co-meeting to discuss improving public health or whatever that might look like. So I just would suggest to public health leadership if you guys could contact the Commission on Aging leadership and kick around those ideas when we do. I don't know what I'm giving you. I'm sorry. To talk about that mental health component in our county and how improving that might look like, and then how our 2 councils can work together. So if you guys would like to reach out to them at some point, that might be. They really like the idea. So
Oh, great.
Thank you, Brian.
And just following up, did we get somebody, step forward to be on the Food Systems Council and Paul step down?
Yep.
Well, she was good.
We don't have as good as food as the Food Systems Council.
We don't have any food.
Huh?
I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking of taking it.
You guys are feeding me.
I already grabbed two pieces of my husband's bacon.
You got all the homework.
Okay. Okay.
We're meeting
today
earlier.
Are we done?
Anything else for the group?
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to meet with the Food Systems Council on January.
You should.
Thank you for attending.
I have one more announcement real quick.
We got one. I can pop in. What? Oh, announcement.
One more announcement.
One more thing.
You guys can share something really, really quick.
Cindy.
January.
Hello. We got one more announcement. Sorry.
January 15th, the DOH is they're taking their quarterly senior fall prevention meetings, coalition meetings, and they're taking them on the road throughout the state. January is going to be here in Vancouver on the 15th at the Health Education Building over at the hospital over on 92nd. So I'll be getting, we're just finalizing the agenda on that. So if anybody's interested, it's a long meeting day, but if, you know, if anybody's interested, be able to show up for a part of it or all of it to talk about development of senior fall coalition programs and things like that and what we can do to cut down senior falls. The DOH is going to be hosting their meeting here in January, the quarterly meeting.
Thanks, Greg.
Have a good evening. Thank you for attending.
Thank you.
Take food from the
Please do. Everybody, please get some leftovers. There's a lot of pie and quite a bit of lasagna, and there's some plates here. So
can I take?
I see that.
I don't know if you'll like scribbly notes. Oh. I can read it or not.
I'll probably have to email you about that.
Yeah, email me a copy that will refresh my memory.
Okay. All right. Then you had notes too, right?
Yeah, these are my own. If you can't read them, then I'll come read them for you.
Okay, all right, super. That's great. And I got these.
My arthritis gets in these old gnarly hairs.
It hurts.
My writing.
Oh, no kidding. This hurts.
I totally agree with you guys. Get out there. Take
whatever you want to take. I already grabbed one.
So, you said it was breast augmentation?
I think so. Where have I seen it? There might be some in the meeting supplies drawer.
Is that over near your desk?
It's right by across from you. That big file cabinet there. You might try that.
This will be my lunch tomorrow. I'll just wrap this up.
Oh, yeah? And where else have I seen it? There's someplace else I've seen it. It's okay. Go ahead. I just need to make sure I call my caterer and tell her, get here. I think she's probably waiting out here.
I think we're just going to move to the
same side. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, we'll come here from you until early January.
Well, and like we just did, kind of little updates about stuff that might be important, but other than that,
I had some mental health issues with the retreat.
All right.
so I think it's good.
So when you told us they called the
we're not going to be able to get a family.
I know. That's the same for us. We'll just be here. The one bad thing is that my daughter has to travel from one side of the state to the other, and she's telling me that it's getting to the point where she's going to have doing that, and I'm going to be an asshole who does that.
Because of kids.
Yeah, that they need to have their own Christmas at home. What about grandma and grandpa? You know, you cannot do that to us.
You guys are both, right?
So far.
We've tried that too.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You and I just did, Trevor.
I'm hoping to, because I've upgraded my television. We have had this old 17-year-old big old Toshiba projector television with a horrible, you know, and my son-in-law can't stand to watch it. Can't stand it. And I finally got the first flat panel, you know, high-def television. It's supposed to be there tonight when I get home. Yeah. So I'm trying to, like, drive it.
Good.